You can also check out extra episodes on our website, goodmorningcomrade.com. Pretty sure this one's going to go out on Thursday. Today we are joined by Diana Hussein. She is a friend of mine, and she's here to talk on Good Morning Comrade. We also have Scott in the studio. How you doing, Diana?
I'm doing as okay as somebody can be right now.
In the middle of a pandemic where... Yeah. First time, so... Never really had to go through a pandemic before, so we're just kind of taking it day by day.
Yeah, this is actually my first experience dealing with a pandemic myself as well.
Scott, is this your first pandemic?
Yeah, first time, but feels like a long time.
First time, long time.
Yeah.
So, how you been doing? So what's going on, y'all?
Oh, man.
Let me tell you, I did go out to the store today for the first time in a while, and it almost like for I've noticed today that most people are wearing sort of like the protective gear and the gloves and all of the things. And I did make sure to tell all of them, at least at the grocery store, I made sure to tell them whatever you folks are making, it's not enough, because those folks are working throughout all of this and they're getting extremely high volume, and every time I go, like, there's never paper towels, there's never anything that's like disinfectant or anything like that.
Yeah, I've heard a big secret is paying cash on account of like that pad that you touch is like, you know, everybody touches it.
I don't know.
Well, what about the reader on the cards or even Apple Pay? I heard more stores are encouraging that use where you don't even have to give your card.
That's a good idea.
That all depends on the store you're at. Like, I can't imagine some of the smaller, like, family-owned markets in the neighborhood is going to be all set up with a brand new hotshot system that even has the card reader.
Right.
Actually, the local store I go to, which is like kind of a local chain of grocery stores, the last time I went in there, they had like a big plastic shield around where you do like the thing. So it's like, while doing the transaction, there isn't like sneeze or something. It's kind of like a sneeze guard between.
It's like a salad bar.
Yeah. And like,
I saw the neighborhood Lebanese market attempting something like that, but it just looked like they had plastic sheet curtains.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even anything between the shopper when they're paying, but it was like, it was a few weeks ago. It was maybe like a first attempt. I myself have not been inside a physical location outside of my own house. And maybe, like, even if you consider, like, curbside pickup that much. But in my house, like, I have two immunocompromised my parents. So I'm very, very strict. And so I haven't even been inside, like, a market since. Because even the neighborhood markets, you don't have an app for them. But you can literally, like, call the guy who knows your dad from the old country to, like, tell you to put some stuff in a basket. And then, like, you could just give them your number over the phone, and they'll hook you up if they know your family from the old country.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
You just call Greg, right?
It's more like Ahmed is who we call.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is the benefit of living in Dearborn, Michigan, where under Sharia law, you have the hookup with your neighborhood market.
That sounds pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
You're up in Dearborn, which is just outside of Detroit. Yeah, is that like a suburb there? I'm not familiar with Michigan at all.
It is a suburb of Detroit, which is growing to be, I guess, the Midwest epicenter of coronavirus.
Yeah, because y'all are one of the hot spots up in Detroit area. We're a hot spot down here in New York. It's just absolute disaster.
Mm.
Yeah, they say we have a twice the like death count is like or percentage as New York does.
Wow, really? Is that true? I don't know. I have to check that. But anyway, so we were talking a little bit before we went on air, before we started recording. What was some of the things that you had noticed about sort of the trends in as far as coronavirus, socioeconomic, and sort of like even, you know, ethnic and racial dynamics?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, Detroit and New Orleans are parallel, not just amid the coronavirus. Like, I think there's a lot of like themes that you notice around poverty and education and, you know, housing issues and transportation as well. I'm not sure what the transportation issues are in New Orleans, but I can tell you there are many in the home of the Motor City. But that is all to say that these are issues that have long impacted certain communities, and that is like vulnerable people of color and Black communities. And I think that just the coronavirus has exacerbated some of these issues, and you're really, really seeing a striking like difference in the Black community compared to the rest of the state, and who's getting infected and who is dying. You know, I jotted down some numbers, and maybe they're not really anything people absorb just hearing them, but when you think about like the entire state of Michigan, 13% of the demographic in the entire state of Michigan is Black. Meanwhile, the amount of the cases with coronavirus, Black population makes up 1/3 of them.
Wow.
40% of all the deaths so far. And like, it's alarming when you look at the way they even report the numbers. They report, like most states do, by counties, right? We have like county, we have like the area where it's like the highest numbers with like Oakland County and Wayne County, which is where Detroit is. But Detroit gets reported on its own because of how many numbers are coming from Detroit.
Wow.
And this even includes like a large number. I don't have them in front of me, but a significant amount of our police department, including our chief. And then there's a state rep who represents the district, Representative Isaac Robinson, who is an amazing ally for worker rights, who I know there's already groups working really hard to make sure that everything he was fighting for in the state legislature is going to continue on. But, you know, those are just like key examples of folks who have been infected, not to mention a large number of the community itself. And it has everything to do with the fact that there's no resources. You know, there's, you know, just a poor infrastructure. But there's also really key issues when you look at the fact that we have no transit.
Right.
And we have issues with people even getting to work. They don't have a car because there's no transit options. And those that are around, like taking a cab every day, is very expensive.
Oh, my God.
When you have the cab drivers off the road, more people who have to go to work and think about what jobs are still going to work right now, those are low wage, lower income, poor people who have to take the bus even more so than they might have been beforehand. And you think about that like case that you heard, the Detroit bus driver who made national news because he posted on Facebook a video because a woman was coughing on the bus. And then you hear the stories about like the workers, the bus drivers, having to walk off the job just to get some procedures for cleaning and disinfecting.
Yeah.
It's such a long uphill fight just to start getting some sort of like consideration for these like workplace conditions,
right,
for people who are still having to go to work. And that is nothing to say about how are we actually going to tend to the sick people now.
Right. And 100% on that. And one of the things that I also, and I've said this on the show many times, and I'm going to keep saying it, the people that are work, like right now we're seeing who is and who, like, who are essential workers right now in our society. And I like doctors, nurses, those kinds of jobs, we already sort of knew that. But
we still took them for granted.
We definitely took them for granted.
We always just appreciated how many hours they were willing to work in a shift, and it was great, and thank you, nurses. We still took them for granted.
100%. Yeah. And
I talked to somebody today, a neighbor of mine, and he was like, oh, yeah, we prayed so much for, like, our daughter to, like, become a nurse. And then, like, now that, like, things are how where they are now, they're like, what did we do? Like,
they did this
for
their daughter.
They're kind of guilty about it. They're like, what did we do? Like, now she's, like, in this like, dire situation, you know? Like, she works in a hospital all the time, and they haven't talked to her in, like, 3 weeks.
You know, another example of a situation that's brewing in Detroit, I'll just read you one headline and then another headline to paint a pretty dire photo picture. Detroit Hospital. 734 employees have tested positive for COVID.
Oh my God.
Listen to this other headline that just came out from today, and I could talk a little bit more about this situation, but nurses protest conditions at Detroit Sinai Grace, said they were told to leave. So nurses at one of the hospitals in Detroit actually, you know, participated in the sit down and were ultimately told to leave, including one person was also fired because they posted a video of it on social media and that broke their social media rules
policy.
Or
yeah. Oh my God. That's
Because you like they have not been posting about this. Like you don't see a lot of videos about this, like because I'm sure of like locked in like policies and stuff, you know? Like HIPAA and stuff.
Right.
You don't see any of this like on social media. Like you don't see the full hospitals and stuff, which is like very like ominous.
For sure.
I think in this example, I think a worker was fired out of retaliation for participating. Basically, this actually, I correct myself. The person who was fired was not because they showed the video of the sit down. This was from a week ago. They spoke out about the condition. So there's been a little bit of an escalation of here. And I should definitely note that this hospital is not union.
Right. Yeah. And there have been workers in other situations too. Like, Amazon workers come to mind. Whole Foods and Instacart workers. I'm not sure if they are still on strike, but they were. And they were asking for double wages.
They basically like struck, and like their only thing that they asked for, I believe, was for PPE and stuff, and then like. Amazon acted like it resolved like off the cuff or whatever, but then like
no, they want the credit for it, of course.
People took like drone pictures of like all the PPE trucks showing up, and they're like, oh, so they got the one thing they wanted by striking, like, you know, like which is a safer working conditions.
Sure, and I know we were talking about like baseball season just recently started. And I know you work with some workers sometimes, that are in that sector, and they're essentially because of the fact that they're not holding baseball and basketball and other sports that normally would be taking place right now, workers like that are essentially out of the job.
Yeah, and these are workers who were among like the first who were told that they were experiencing some layoff, at least.
Mm-hmm.
For a certain amount of time, but you know, you hear about like, you know, the news headlines were all ready to celebrate like MLB team owners when they announced that
praise
all
the billionaires.
Teams were pledging $1 million to support out of work laid off stadium workers, like the people who are key to creating the game day experience for fans, who are very important. And you hear it from the players themselves, how important they are. So that $1 million pledge by owners, the very, very rich billionaire owners of baseball, seemed very exciting. And I saw so many, even my favorite sports writers, applauding these owners.
Right.
Until you read the fine print. Who exactly does that $1 million fund actually like consider? And also, how much does $1 million even like amount to per worker? When you think about the number of workers who are part of the game day operations at the stadiums and arenas, and at the end of the day, I can tell you there's a large number, if not at least tens of thousands of workers who are subcontracted who are not included,
they don't qualify
in that fund until you have to pressure these teams to get them to include these workers. These are subcontract workers who are just as important to the game day experience, who do things like concessions, who are your beer vendors, who serve you your food, who clean the stadium. These are if not the most important workers to creating a game day experience that's worth coming back to. And yet the teams, they got their headlines, but you know, they wanted to just move along and wash their hands of the subcontracted workers, which is not uncommon. There's so many multi-billion dollar companies who try to wash their hands of any of their subcontracted employees, but at the end of the day, they're just as responsible for these workers. If they weren't, even if they're not their direct employers,
right,
they still have a responsibility and an accountability for these workers.
And they use a legal technicality to put them in the position where they're subcontractors anyway, right?
We had a kind of a similar story in New Orleans where the big basketball rookie, this guy named Zion Williamson. He like once like all these like call-offs became like a big deal, he was like, don't worry, I will pay for like all the salaries of the basketball workers. And then like people were kind of side-eyeing like the billionaire owner of the team.
Yeah, when a 20-year-old is showing him up.
Yeah,
Right. Why is a 19-year-old millionaire going to be taken? Kevin Love, same thing, pledged $100,000 for the Cavalier Arena workers. Mm-hmm. But why isn't Dan Gilbert one of the richest people in the world?
Ooh, Dan Gilbert.
Dan Gilbert, who is a straight-up modern-day villain. Let me tell you a little bit about Dan Gilbert.
Get him.
He owns a lot of property in Cleveland, but he owns almost all of downtown Detroit. And he has this like fancy office that I imagine is definitely on the top floor of some tall ass building. He sits in his big office and he actually has like a miniature of the city of Detroit. And every time he purchases another building, he lights that up on his like miniature.
Oh my God. It's his toys.
Is that not the most villain caricature?
That's literally some like Dr. Evil shit. Like.
And of course, you have to imagine that he has like a maniac laughter every time he gets to light up another building.
Yeah, he's
but
like,
ask
like,
him, what about the workers in the arena for the Cavs? Like, what about them? I'm sure he's going to go ahead and turn that light off.
Yeah, they're just nothing but red ink in the line going down a little bit. You know, they're a section in the pie chart that he wants to mitigate as much as possible.
We're making the connections between like Detroit and New Orleans, but like literally the same thing, like. The previous owner of the Saints, whose like wife acquired it after he died, like he owns a building next to the stadium, and he owns both the basketball and the football teams. Like it literally is like a big, huge building with a foundation of like a dead mall, like at the bottom of it. like people like hold him up as this hero, but like once Katrina happened, he was like straight up threatening the whole state to be like, hey man, if you guys don't get your shit together, we're moving to San Antonio. Like
we got him over a barrel.
Yeah, like these states have like these football teams have so much power like on a state level.
Go ahead, Diane.
I can't mention Detroit billionaires without bringing up the Illich family. Mm-hmm. Because just like this, the Saints owner. The Illiches own the Tigers and the Red Wings and the Little Caesars Arena.
Yeah, those are beloved
and
teams.
And the Illiches got to also enjoy their headlines of being part of the $1 million pledge for MLB teams, but I can tell you that that does not include the subcontracted workers at Comerica Park as well as Little Caesars Arena. And technically, the arena is owned by the Illich family. But they do work, I don't know the exact terms of the deal, but that does include the Pistons. And then the billionaire that owns the Pistons, Tom Gores, I don't know who would be responsible, whether it's Gores or the Illiches, for the Pistons arena workers, but they too are getting screwed right now. Mm-hmm. And I gotta give credit where credit is due to a billionaire who did the right thing, and that's Mark Cuban. Mm-hmm. He was actually the first, even before Zion, before Kevin Love, before those folks, Mark Cuban was the first person to come out and say, look, these are the people that are getting the most screwed by this. We're fine. Our team's going to be fine. The players are going to be fine. The people are not going to be fine are the people who rely on their hourly wage at the arena that make sure that, you know, Maverick fans are able to enjoy themselves when they come to a game. And he was the first to announce that he was going to make sure that they're taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that there's any terms that exclude anybody out of who Mark mm-hmm. Cuban is willing to support. And I just would ask of the billionaires who so take pride in their, you know, like their position as team owners, because they're all billionaires for other reasons.
Right.
They're
this is this is vanity.
Own the team.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
billionaires who decided that they could afford to own a team and then mm-hmm. did so. Because it's something that they have a passion for.
Right. It's basically like their yacht, you know?
Yeah. This is like their big, like, legitimate kind of, like, business to where they get, like, public, like, acclaim and stuff. Like,
and
like
they see
our,
themselves as community leaders.
Yeah.
Like, our previous, like, our owner was, like, got famous from, like, being a car dealer. Like, he owned
Tom Benson.
Like, all these, like, Benson Hondas and Benson Fords and stuff. But, like, when he owned a team, it was when they, like, named a dance after him or whatever, like, after the games won. But
you also have to remember some of these billionaires are billionaires because of certain industries. Like, I think about the family that owns the Buffalo Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
They're famous Buffalo.
Connor might know.
They're like, I forget, they're like penguins something.
Pittsburgh Penguins, perhaps?
Yeah.
No. It's they're in Buffalo, and their arena workers there. Here's the thing. They made their billions out of the energy industry, which is going to be among those that gets bailed out. And if there was a billionaire team owner that was among the worst, it would probably be this. who didn't even bother to make any like bullshit commitments. Sorry if I can't.
It's fine. This one's actually not going to go out on the radio. This is going to be on our podcast feed.
Okay. Well, they laid everybody off. They just fired everybody.
Unbelievable. But, well, believable, but disgusting.
Just told them nothing and then fired them. And then they're expecting to be bailed out themselves for their billionaire energy work.
They want to get paid as much as they can from government money, but they also want to make sure that they can cut their losses as much as possible. And one more thing on this too. You're saying that these baseball teams are putting in $1 million each for the entirety of workers on, you know, that are being output out. Like, if I think about that, and like, I'm not trying to compare. Well, you know what? I'm not going to compare them to the baseball player workers because that's different. But essentially the billionaires that are doing this, they do spend millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars in payrolls in certain situations. And they also have, I mean, billions of dollars by which that they are just so wealthy that this is not even a real amount of money to them. This is pennies to them. And I guess that's what I'm trying to get across here.
Like, the money you find in your couch is like what that means to a billionaire.
So if you imagine, I know like in, I don't know the exact number of how many workers like on average work at a stadium or whatever, but I know it's definitely more than say 2,000, right?
Right.
So what do you think about $1 million divided by 2,000 workers?
That's like, yeah.
Is that $500?
A piece or something like that. It's not a lot of money.
To some billionaire that like, they're like, yeah, it's like the joke from Arrested Development, a banana, what could that cost? $10?
I mean, I wonder if these billionaires were like, you know what we should give them is $1 million. That's an amount of money like that, that sounds like a lot to them without even actually thinking what
like
does that amount to?
Sounds like a money Scott, amount of money you'd win on a game show.
Scott mentioned Dr. Evil earlier. Like, it's almost like they're saying, ah, yes, we'll give them $1 million.
Yeah, it's just like they don't know what regular people consider money like.
Well, I mean, and again, it does sound like a lot of money, I suppose. But I mean, again, like you were saying earlier, divvying that up amongst 2,000 workers, there's not much for every single one. You know, and these people, this is their job. This is their livelihood. This is the income that they need to survive. And while
a lot of them, they wait all off season for especially the first week. Opening week is a big week. And
huge.
They expect that income. And they're expecting it. And then through no fault of their own, out of nowhere, they're told that they're not coming back to work anytime soon. And then the teams are also making these big, like, celebratory announcements that, oh, don't worry, we'll take care of our workers. And imagine what it's like to be the workers excluded from that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not to mention already having on top
of
everything to figure out things. When you're a stadium worker, you're not making millions of dollars. You know, it is not the highest wage job, but it is something that many of these workers have spent decades taking pride in and have found a way to make ends meet on what they're able to make. Even a team like the Tigers that sucks, I can tell you those workers feel like they're doing fine in the season, despite the team not having as many fans showing up to the games.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, these workers take pride in being part of the Tigers or other, you know, team families. So when they're told that this is like the respect they're given back, I will say there's a couple of teams that have at least started on the right track of doing the right thing. I can tell you the Padres are one. I believe it was maybe 100,000 that they committed to the subcontracted workers.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Sox have committed 500,000 specifically for the subcontracted workers. Same thing with the Giants. And the Marlins. So kudos, Derek Jeter, the Kalamazoo kid. Meanwhile, you have teams like the New York baseball teams.
Both of them.
Who are
the Yankees? Who spend more than anything? Like they. How much is the pizza at Yankee Stadium or something like that? How much is the beer at Yankee Stadium?
So you want to hear what the Yankees have committed to subcontract workers?
What is it? How much?
I think it was $700,000.
So yeah.
workers have to apply.
Oh.
Yeah, but I'm sure they're not putting out a newsletter or anything like that.
And the Mets are basically excluding subcontracted workers. And let me just say, even the teams that have committed something, everybody can do a little bit more.
Of course.
This is not this through no fault of their own. These workers do not deserve to be just like stolen what would have been their wages and benefits, not to mention.
Yeah,
100%. And so Mr. Met is just a bad boss, is what this is about.
I can only imagine the escalating labor campaign.
New York.
Hey, if anybody wants to support one of these teams, you can check out unitehere.org/sports, and you'll see all of the online petitions that are available for you to sign and send an email to these owners and let them know that they ought to, you know, make sure that all their workers are paid, including their subcontracted workers, and make sure that they pay their subcontractors to keep these workers' income coming in. And I can tell you that these teams are definitely listening to every single email they get through this online letter campaign.
That's unitehere.org/sports. Cool. Yeah, and we can definitely put that in the show notes. So when we put that, when we release the show, it'll be right there as a link, so that people can go to that and sign the petition, and make sure that the workers that make going to a baseball game or whatever fun, you know, the guy that walks around and gives you a hot dog or brings you a beer, or somebody who's, you know, working at the security gate or whatever, they take the tickets or whatever it is. Like, there are so many workers at these places.
And memories of the people that like have the big ice chest and walk around and say, have a fresh beer over here, cold beer over here.
Yeah, it's part of the atmosphere. And these people are getting the short end of it right now. They're getting really, really screwed over. And we need to make sure that we're showing that we're with them, you know?
I would posit that these owners are probably paying like more in their media budgets to counter the bad press. Like, not like supporting these people is like less than the money they've chipped in to like actually help these people. You
potentially.
Know?
I mean, I don't know the numbers.
Stadiums are like last money out. I mean, first money out, last money in, you know, like they suffer the least.
And like, just a note to these teams that are concerned about the amount of money they'll be losing by spending a little extra to support subcontracted workers. The amount of money you'll get in earned media, free earned media, the value of that earned media, just highlighting your decision to support all of the workers that make your game day experience what it is and a memorable one, that is invaluable, even more so than an extra few million dollars would be.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie.
And plus you get to do a good thing.
I work in service industry, and both of my jobs like was straight up just like, hey guys, like we can't do the job anymore because the mayor shut us all down, but like here are a bunch of avenues you can go to like apply for these things. And they're like, they haven't just like cut me loose. They're like helping me out. I just got a check in the mail for one of my jobs. Just like $100 or whatever. Like it's like a pittance to everybody. And like, but that, like,
it's enough
to me right now.
Right now.
I need $100.
And these are not huge business. I'm not exactly sure what one of them is, but I know that the bar that you work at is not a giant operation.
It's not a juggernaut.
No, I mean, but there's sort of a, I mean, at least there's a
yeah,
some interest in like not screwing people over, I suppose. That's important to point out. Go ahead, Scott.
Oh no, I'm done.
Diana, anything else you want to add on this, so we can sort of move on?
Well, if we want to continue to talk about,
oh, let's go.
Billionaire companies who are not prioritizing the needs of workers, we can continue in the hospitality industry.
Love
because
it.
You have, like, for example, hotel companies who are expecting a bailout for the government, and under the contingency that this money will be used to keep workers on payroll, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it sounds familiar if you know anything about what the airlines are trying to do
now.
When you get a bailout with terms that say you have to make sure that you are not firing workers and that you're keeping them on payroll, which is key.
Mm-hmm.
Because payroll means more than just pay. It means benefits. And in this case for the hotel companies, it was 8 weeks worth of benefits,
mm-hmm.
which isn't probably the timeline that we're looking at, but at least it's a start.
Mm-hmm.
So get this. The hotel execs who took millions in new stock buybacks just this last month while workers were losing everything are now trying to change the rules, or having Congress change the rules, so then they could put more money in the pockets of owners versus having to actually pay worker payroll and keep worker benefits and health care during a health care crisis, might I add. So basically, they want to be able to fire whoever they want to fire and not retain any workers, and then be able to, like, you know, pay the owners and lenders or whoever. And they're threatening that, you know, if they don't get this, then they're going to go bankrupt. But, I mean, my personal opinion, let them.
Yeah. Why wouldn't?
Why haven't they saved? Where's all their money? Like, aren't they worried about a rainy day?
Yeah. I'm more worried about people.
They say to poor people, like, back at them.
I'm more worried about people staying alive than whether or not this company goes out of business, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you guys know about the bankruptcy CEO in chief that we have in the Oval Office, but if you look at a guy like Trump and how many times he's declared corporate bankruptcy, or his casinos have declared bankruptcy, I mean, he made out with those deals, so I just wonder why the hotel companies aren't so eager themselves to take such a deal where it's not like they'll lose out entirely.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it just shows who they're prioritizing when it comes to, you know, whether or not they want to make sure that the workers that actually generate all of their wealth are taken care of versus, like, you know, the top level owners and shareholders sitting at top who are fine right now, mind you.
Right, exactly.
That's very much like the job creator myth, where they're like, hey, we need all these tax credits and stuff like that. Like, we need, like, all these incentives. Like, I mean, New Orleans is very notorious for that. Like all these people being like, we are job creators. We need to create all these jobs.
I mean, look at the Hard Rock.
What is this? Oh, man. Don't even get me started with the damn Hard Rock. I work at two jobs. I could see the Hard Rock from both of them.
Yeah, he works, like, right across the street. So you're familiar with the Hard Rock situation, Diana?
The
collapse?
The property, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Hard Rock, mind you, is a gaming operator, and I don't want to just focus on the hotel companies, because I will say that these companies are just in there as well. Mm-hmm.
And like convention center. We can get the convention center a bit. Go ahead, Scott.
The contractors responsible for all this are, like, they actually stand to benefit from, like, having this horrible thing happen and them not ponying it up to, like, destroy the buildings, because there are, like, two or three historical buildings, like, in the shadow of it that they might have to destroy and, like, give them the rights to, like, in this case.
They're snapping it up and getting more projects.
Like, how does it work where you fuck up and, like, they are going to give you all this, like, new property to, like, help out? Like, they haven't done anything to, like, they haven't paid the city any of the money they're supposed to. Like, they haven't come up with a date to, like, get rid of all the rubble. Ugh, man, it drives me insane. Like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
And speaking of, I mean, that the Hard Rock itself was a historical building. That was the Woolworths.
If this town had a newspaper worth a fuck, they'd be, like, putting out, like, stories every other day about
it. Yeah. So, yeah, our media is basically owned by a statewide rich guy, John Georges. They had two newspapers here for a while, the Advocate and the.
Well, we had the one from here, but then they had the
NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune NOLA.com was owned by Advance Media, which was the USA Today. So it was basically national media running as local. It was that sort of thing, and it got snapped up by a statewide billionaire. So anyway.
Yeah, I know NOLA.com and I know The Advocate.
Yeah, they're the same now because John Georges, who is the owner of The Advocate, he just bought the Times-Picayune and just consolidated all of his media power into one. And they snapped up a bunch of they had a local community local paper, like a weekly called The Gambit. It's still in existence, but it was bought by The Advocate. And now they're basically just a vertical in The Advocate. They still have a release and all that other stuff, but it's just kind of, like, rolled into that empire.
they literally had like an old building where they used to print the local newspaper, and like in the past year they just like tore it down.
They smashed it, yeah.
Like my friend lived like in the shadow of it, and he would take like constant pictures of them just like tearing down a new section.
And they let it go straight to hell first too. They let it go to like complete.
Oh, it was a derelict building. Like people lived in there and stuff.
Yeah.
Like it was just a big media building that nobody was in, like, and people just lived there.
Is there any notable companies that this billionaire owns outside of the media?
I don't know it off the top of my head, but I can actually find that out.
Is it as nefarious maybe as the Sheldon Adelson situation in Las Vegas, where he bought one of the most prominent Vegas area outlets, and it's just basically started working as a shill factory.
He just made it like a fan newsletter of himself. Yeah, I did hear about all that, because they talked about that in the documentary about like Hulk Hogan.
Oh,
he took down Gawker and stuff.
There's a documentary for that?
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
I'm gonna have to watch that. Oh my god, that was such an like I don't know how we got.
That was one of the like a big hole in my heart things when I was watching, and I was like, oh man, things really are very bad.
And I used to read Gawker a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so yeah, so Hard Rock gaming companies are one of the things that one of the groups of bosses and companies that are screwing over workers. How are they doing that?
Well I don't want to single out anyone, okay, because I don't know offhand exact like any single company, but I could tell you that they kind of fold in a little bit similar to the hotel companies, in which they're, you know, expecting and, you know, a bailout, but are trying to challenge any expectation that they should not fire workers.
Right, they want the bailout, but they don't want to give it to workers. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you hear, like, the flight attendants are campaigning on the Treasury right now, which basically, here's the gist that I understand with the flight attendants. When the stimulus deal was made, the airline bailout aspect of it, the deal was made there, the expectations that the airlines would get, I think it was loan or grants, maybe, that they would use to keep workers on payroll.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was part of that deal was the that the Treasury could take equity in the airlines, about 40%, if they wanted to. But there was kind of like, the deal was made where that wasn't expected to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, Republicans are shit. And then decided to go ahead and threaten that. And so the airlines are now threatening to not take any deal.
Of course.
And basically screw over the workers.
And they've gotten the coverage to do that because of the political forces within the Congress that can essentially spike whatever they want. They can essentially do it in the Senate. They can essentially kill anything that the House passes.
I mean, it is a tale as old as time, because I remember, like, in my history book, in Louisiana, like, social studies, they had a picture of Calvin Coolidge, like playing a trumpet or something, like, to, like, the big business dancing or something like that. It's just like, that's how we got back from the depression or whatever. Like,
no,
just like the oldest playbook, like
the 20s, the 1920s.
I should say in this example, it's the Treasury that's going to screw the deal over, because the airlines would essentially go bankrupt right now without
the bailout
grants to keep workers on payroll.
Right.
And so if they were to take that equity from the Treasury, then the airlines would not take the deal and then go bankrupt, then workers are screwed.
Right.
At the end of the day, you have these decision makers in D.C. and these billionaire bosses who are functioning in the same way. They're not looking out for the working people who desperately need the bailout, and instead are trying to figure out how to exploit these deals for their own pockets. Like, it blows my mind that in the face of the most unprecedented moment in our history that we all can recognize right now, this is unlike anything our country's ever faced.
Yeah.
And yet these bosses, whether they're billionaire bosses or DC bosses, are trying to find a way to pad their pockets.
Right. They're taking it as an opportunity to make more money. Because there was this, I shouldn't talk about this sort of like too deeply, but there was a guy who was like a fundraiser for Republicans who ended up getting a deal to start he created a company called Blue Flame, and he started selling, like, he instantly got the ability to start selling PPE and ventilators and all kinds of, like, critical emergency infrastructure, maybe not ventilators, but definitely PPE. And essentially, he was able to corner that market based off of political favors that he'd gotten as being a part of Washington for such a long time.
Did you hear these weird stories about, like, people buying PPE, like, in, like, the parking lots of Burger Kings? And the only reason, like, one city got more PPE is because they showed up, like, 20 minutes before, like, other city representatives.
What?
Doing these deals. It's, like, some weird shit going on, like...
There's no more rules.
Yeah. No.
Like, apparently today I heard that we turned down 3 million masks from Canada. Like, why would we do that? It's just like when we turned down those tests from Germany. Like, why is, like, the United States using their, like, their geographical isolation to prop up all these businesses? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
No, just political decision making.
Yeah, like, why did they not blink an eye about, like, releasing, like, $2 trillion in relief to all these companies? But, like, once we got to support all these workers, like, oh, man, we got to have all these fights in Congress. Like, all these, like, very, very, like, visible, like battles between the Republicans and the Democrats. Like, it's literally political theater.
You know, there is, too, like, a fight that no one's even talking about among all this. Like, you know, there's conversation about unemployment. Mm-hmm. There's conversation about payroll. But at the end of the day, there's also a very, very important thing that we're not talking about right now, is that these workers who are laid off are going to lose their health care. So add the numbers of uninsured people in this country to millions and millions and millions and millions more that have been laid off in March, where April 1st not only did rent become due, but their health care they lost coverage. So when we have these conversations about the federal government providing relief for workers right now, why isn't there one about how are we going to cover health care? Because we're talking about how we're going to pay for companies to avoid bankruptcy, but we're not talking about how are we going to pay for workers to be able to afford to go to the doctor when they get coronavirus.
Right.
And it's just really despicable when you think about that, when for so long, for how many, like, months and going on over years now, we've been having a conversation around the 2020 election. And every time healthcare was brought up, and anybody that may have even hinted about an idea where a healthcare plan might provide healthcare for so many more uninsured people, then the question of how are we going to pay for it gets brought up.
Yeah.
Well, how are we paying to, like, to help these companies avoid bankruptcy? How are we even paying for any of this? That I don't understand, like, finance, so I don't understand, like, Federal Reserve or whatever, but it seems like we could just kick around trillions and trillions of dollars when we see fit, but yet we're still not even talking about how we're going to, at least in the short term, pay for people in this country to have health care. And how are we even starting to see one, much less numerous headlines coming out of people not being able to, like, people dying of coronavirus because they couldn't afford a test, or they couldn't, or they're wondering how are we going to pay for a ventilator? Like, this is sick and despicable.
Yeah.
And it should be the first thing our country's talking about when it comes to a federal relief bill.
And on that point,
New York is one of the most, like, you know, that's the whole entire country about, like, coronavirus.
Say again, but,
like,
Scott, you broke up. Say again.
New Orleans is, like, I mean, New York is one of the, like, big hotspots in, like, who, like of coronavirus in the whole entire city, like, in the whole entire country. And, like, they had a report where the Bronx Zoo tested a tiger, and the tiger tested positive for coronavirus. And somebody was like, why are you testing tigers for this thing when there are, like, people in your city that could, like, benefit from these? Like, why are you doing this? Like, what kind of science are you doing right now?
First off, solidarity with the tiger.
Yeah, solidarity with that tiger. And I heard that there's maybe, like, a couple other tigers that were showing symptoms too. So chances are, like, the whole like, tiger community and the Bronx Zoo, like, much solidarity to the tiger community in the New York area right now as they're dealing with the coronavirus and their, like, you know, comrades are infected. But I think that's scary as hell. Like, I heard a cat in Belgium also tested positive. And I mean, like, personally, that breaks my heart. And it's, I almost feel like I can't even hear those stories, even more so than the amount of people. But at the end of the day, it's like, it goes to show how important testing is, because it seems like we can't get it from cats, but they can get it from us. And we don't even know if we're infecting our babies right now.
Right.
I heard they can be carriers.
And so so here's the thing too. So you know, both of y'all know, because I wouldn't shut up about it all weekend. Yeah. My cat went missing over the weekend. Like, we couldn't find her. And while that's happening, while this cat is out, I hear that cats could potentially transfer coronavirus. And I'm just thinking about, like, this tiny little kitty, you know? And I don't know. It's just, like, one of these really sad situations. Anyway, Sam is a hero. That's the long and the short of the story. He's the greatest cat of all time. And he's a big sweetie. And he's sitting right over there.
I mean, my stand-up.
Shout out to Sam, the sweetheart, for being a hero and being on the front lines for his sister cat.
My stance is that Sam is kind of a creep that will always attack me at weird times, but, you know, I will give him his props on this.
Respect to Sam. Anyway, so hospitality, gaming type bosses, and that's all sort of the same sector. And the convention center in New Orleans as well, they were recently set up. They got money to open up as a hospital, but the workers that were already there... So the convention center is getting fully funded for opening up this hospital, and the workers that were doing the job prior are just totally out of it. So and Local 23 has actually got a little bit of action around that. United HGRE, shout out to them, and hopefully there can be ways to sort of bring attention to this. To kind of make sure that people who will be coming to convention to do conventions in the future are aware of how the convention center is treating its workers.
So are they not going to use the convention center workers to help with the operation of the hotel?
They're bringing in workers from Texas right now.
I can tell you there's at least like a couple hotels like in Hawaii that have been converted to quarantine sites, and they're using the hotel workers, like the housekeepers and such, who are now trained under, like, you know, COVID needs, and they have a job because of that opportunity.
Here's an article from 2 days ago. Louisiana unions irate as Texas workers brought in for coronavirus convention center jobs. Some local union leaders
are... Is this a form of scabbing under the coronavirus?
Pretty much, yeah. Corona scabs. Yeah, let me just read straight from the article. Some local union leaders are angered that dozens of workers have been brought from Texas to help convert the Ernest Morial Convention Center into a medical facility to deal with the coronavirus crisis at a time when hundreds of their members are out of work. The order to convert the convention center into a facility will provide up to 3,000 beds, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, again, they're getting contracts for $76 million out to bid, and workers get nothing.
Who are the Texas workers trained in?
I have to.
I can tell you. For one, FYI, HERE does not exist anymore. HERE merged with Unite, and that union is called Unite Here.
Yeah.
Good?
You gave a shout out to HERE.
Unite. I said Unite HERE. I've been saying it like that for a long time.
It's
but
here. Unite
okay,
here.
I'm sorry.
And I could tell you from what I know about this special union. That they're definitely going to keep fighting to make sure that the workers who are laid off in the conventions that are included in any opportunity in New Orleans, because I know that I gave the example of Hawaii, and there's other places in which, like, hotels are being converted to quarantine sites, and those workers are being trained.
Yeah, this seems to be affecting building trades as well, for similar situations for that conversion. In fact, Andy O'Brien started talking about, he said it was galling to see that dozens of Texas workers are building the emergency site at the time too. So yeah, it's a lot going on in the sense of who's coming in and who's doing what during this process. But I know that Unite Here, Local 23 is developing actually, and they're part of a coalition kind of bring attention to the behavior of the convention center. Like, much love to Local 23. I love the folks over there.
You know, I forgot what it reminded me of.
It's okay.
I forgot what I was going to say.
It's okay. Anyway, so just the general sense of it is workers are getting the short end in general at convention center. I mean, that would sort of fall into under that hospitality. You had Major League Baseball and other. So basketball is happening. The who knows if there's going to be a playoffs. Hockey, professional wrestling. All the workers that generally do those kinds of shows.
I was talking to a friend of mine, and like those shows, like they do, like they are unionized locally, like. Because when they need people to, like, do sound and, like, kind of do things where, like taking things off the trucks, moving them up and transporting, like, those things are done locally at a union level, but their mm-hmm. workers, like, their performers are not unionized.
Yeah, professional wrestlers are definitely not. They're independent contractors. They're responsible for their own travel and their own health care. It's actually
a disaster. Even the non-wrestlers, like the staff, like the folks mm-hmm. who travel that do, like, the shows, camera operators, all those folks yeah. are not union.
Yeah, they treat them like family or whatever, right?
Right. Yeah. Anyway, so.
Oh, I remembered the thing I wanted to bring up.
Cool.
And workers being retrained under the COVID
Corona,
world.
Yeah.
Well, you hear some workers literally did a wildcat to make them retrain to start build. Like I'm talking about factory workers wanting to be retrained to build the ventilators. When
Yeah, that was
in some of the. That was in Detroit, right?
Well, in Detroit, there was wildcat strike at one of the GM plants because mm-hmm. they weren't doing anything about COVID when they found more and more of their workers were testing positive, and that
right.
started, like you know, that ignited the company to shut down to make sure that there is procedures in place for sanitation mm-hmm. and. You know, that was the point, like, I think for me, that was the point where it got really, really serious is when the auto plants were shutting down.
Yeah.
Because, I didn't think they would, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Even when I knew just how serious it was, I'm like, well, the plants aren't going to shut down and those workers are just all going to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
I heard there was a Boeing one because they were like, why the hell are we making jet engines right now? Like, that's not what the world needs. Like,
I think it was GE workers that
yeah,
were like,
that's what it was.
Be making something.
Yeah.
Boeing is a funny story. Like, Boeing was in the headlines because that was a company that was demanding a bailout until the terms they were presented was that, like, hey, you want a bailout? Like, here are some terms. And they didn't like him. And then they're like, oh, well, you know what? We don't need a bailout, actually. And that's a prime example of a company just trying to, like, hey, maybe this is an opportunity
right.
to make a little extra
they,
cash
yeah.
when we don't even need it.
What's even the justification for their bailout? I mean, they're just not producing as many, death machines as they were prior.
I wonder, like, and I don't know enough about corporate finance to really know, but I wonder if all these companies, including the airlines, including these hospitality companies, just were, like, shut down for the whole year and just considered what the first 3 months of 2020, what their revenue or profit generated as what they generate for the year. Like, maybe it's not going to be as high as it was in the last few years, but...
That'll be fine.
Is it not? I mean, is it really nothing? Probably not. It's at least a few million.
Mm-hmm.
It's at least enough for everybody in certain level of management to be okay for the whole year. Mm-hmm. But they're still like scraping for more because they just got so accustomed to multi-billion dollars a year.
Right.
That maybe they have like half of 1 billion to go for 2020 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not okay with that. And they're just like describing like a dire situation that COVID created for their industry.
Right.
But it's like, really, have you just gotten a little bit greedy?
Yeah. And again, crisis is opportunity, right? There's chaos. There's nobody knows what to do. People are paying attention,
exactly.
to what's happening. It essentially it is. And I think that is a term that is very often sort of like, I don't know, I find it that can be sort of overused and saturated. But I think this is a perfect example of
it's,
that.
It's almost one of those things where you hear somebody be like, well, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission or whatever, Like,
you know what?
Well,
let him ask.
Yeah.
Showing their asses with every single bailout ask that they don't need right now.
Yeah.
And I like the term pandemic profiteering.
I like it. It's a lot more alliterative. I like it.
yeah, right? I mean, we're in a disaster. Might as well be like specific about it.
I think Naomi Klein said COVID capitalism, but I like the one that you said better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more accessible to the mainstream.
Yeah.
Pandemic profiteering.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like COVID profiteering is like, oh, we won't be able to use that on the next one, like, which is definitely gonna happen.
And when you talk about capitalism, sometimes people's eyes will glaze over and they'll be like, oh yeah, there they go.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
We're inoculating people to socialism right now. We don't need them to realize it just yet.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, we do talk about language on this show a fair amount, and sort of like what are the sort of terms and conditions, or what are the words that people will respond positively to, and what are the ones that are sort of make them turn their brains off? And that is really a critical distinction when you're trying to reach out to the broad mass of people that can actually, you know, feel empowered to do something about this, or feel that they would even like to have them even have most folks even listening. And when you start using terms, you know, like when you start using almost like terms that sort of are contentious or that are sort of like hemmed in, they can essentially, most people, even me, you know, most people can just sort of like, okay, fine, sure, whatever.
I mean, me is kind of like a socialism neophyte. People being like, all this like kind of Soviet apologism is like, I mean, I'm not like all here for it, but like there is a thing around like the 70s or 80s where like every hero that kind of represented like America, like Captain America, like Superman, like one of like, they subtly slid in the fact that like one of their big like slogan things is like capitalism is like, yeah, truth, justice, and the American way, right? Yeah, you know, like capitalism.
It's classic propaganda stuff. It's smart marketing and advertising.
It's just like very creepy, like, because I feel like you don't see those things in like earlier kind of like media, like, because it almost became
it's there. Oh, it's totally there. It's just assumed.
But like the opposite of a bad thing is like something that is just inherently good. You know what I'm saying? Catch me if I'm rambling, guys.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So sort of like what, I guess to get back to, sort of like the ways to support workers, you mentioned Unite Here .org/sports. Are there any other ways that you know of that can get people sort of even like small scale calls to action, petitions, or just ways to show support?
Well, I can tell you, Unite Here Hospitality Workers, I think it's like 90% are laid off, and one key way, and I know a lot of people have actually reached out to me and other people and Unite Here for this, but there is a donation link set up. It's unitehere.org/donate. Those funds are going to be distributed to locals or based on needs. And so I think if there's one thing that folks, if they have some to spare, and I know that there's a lot of fundraisers that are happening right now given the circumstances, but that's for hospitality workers in need, including non-Unite Here members, by the way. I think right now Unite Here is taking the mantle of like the representative of all hospitality workers, because it isn't just Unite Here members that are laid off and impacted right now. I think it's important that hospitality workers across the board feel like there's somebody out there that is working to make sure that, you know, they're taken care of, whether that's in DC or whether it's through the bosses, you know, contributing something. So this donation link will help union and non-union workers, and that's unitehere.org/donate.
Cool. Sure. Anything else you want to say on our way out? Scott?
No.
Okay. Well, thanks, Diane. I really appreciate you coming on. It's always great to talk to you. It's always good to see people's faces and hear their voices. I mean, especially right now when most of what you're doing is happening inside your house. You know, like I get so cooped up and I get so like one of the weird things I noticed today, like when I went out to the store, was at least I do get to see people, and that matters, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I started to get a little bit like exhausted of like Zoom after Zoom after Zoom.
Yeah.
And then I was on like a normal conference call, and I'm like, you know what? There shouldn't be any normal conference calls right now.
Yeah, they're miserable.
I felt like with Zoom, I've gotten used to it too. Everybody used to hate video conference meetings, but now it's just like a regular thing, and it does make a world of difference. I think what's going to happen is when this is all over, we're going to start looking at each other's faces in person, and that's going to start feeling weird.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, you're breathing. It's disgusting.
I do have something.
Go ahead.
Check on your friends, man.
Like, yeah, do check in with your friends. Make sure you're taking care of yourself too. Like I have to tell myself this one too. Like, make sure, like, this is gonna sound gross, but like, make sure that you're like keeping up with yourself and like showering every day and stuff like this. Yeah. Because like, when you're at home and you're not leaving the house, you can just sort of kind of fall apart, you know, just because of the solitude of it all. Like, it's me, my wife, dogs, and cats for the most part around here.
You know, I'm trying to get in the habit of, like, in the morning, like, I don't necessarily need to, like, get dressed like I'm going to work, but, right. Like, you know, just, like, wash my face, get up like I'm, like, going out in public, maybe mm-hmm. change my shirt, put a little bit of makeup on because I'm going to be on Zoom calls all day. Like, do something to feel like I'm getting up for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also found that, like, mid-afternoon shower breaks, because you don't need, like, a lunch break. You're not going anywhere for lunch. Right. Just, like, grabbing whatever is around. But like it's refreshing, and I found that that's like a nice like break whenever I need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
go outside, man. Go outside.
Breathe some fresh air.
Sunlight.
Yeah, one of the go ahead.
Save up. I feel like I really want to get that like rush of like you know like what's it called?
Adrenaline.
Yeah, there you go. Like it feels good, you know.
Showering gives you yeah, sure.
That's great.
All right. Well, thanks again, Diana, for coming on. Like, you're so smart and you know so much about these things, and I really do like appreciate talking with you about this.
Hey, I think I would love to come back sometime. This was fun.
Absolutely. And you can check us out every Tuesday on WHIV FM, Good Morning Comrade. You can get more information at goodmorningcomrade.com. Check us out our website, like I said, goodmorningcomrade.com, on Twitter at Comrade Morning. And we also have email us contact at goodmorningcomrade.com.
Oh, can I get a little shout?
Shout?
Follow me on Twitter. Heya Diana.
Heya Diana. That's right. You can not follow Scott on Twitter. He does not give that out on here. You can follow me at Eminem Prof.
Or you can not follow me. It's not that exciting.
She's a good follow. She ticks off some bad people online sometimes, and that's always nice.
I made the news for talking shit to Elon Musk once.
Okay, so
best reason.
All right.
That'll be a story for next time.
Okay, fine. All right. Well, all right, bye.